protect others. Werewolves, he wanted the public to believe, at least for a while yet, were just people who turned furry under the full moon. The wolves who had come out first were heroes who put their lives on the line to protect the weaker humans. The Marak, like the Fae before him, chose to keep as much of the werewolves' darker aspects as carefully hidden as he could. But I think most of the credit for the peaceful acceptance of the revelation belongs to the Fae. For more than two decades, the Fae had managed to present themselves as weak, kindly, and gentle. And anyone who has read their Brothers Grimm or Andrew Lang knows just what a feat that is. No matter what Samuel threatened, his father, the Marak, would never agree to expose the vampires. There was no way to soft-pedal the fact that vampires fed on humans. And once people realized there really were monsters, they might just realize that werewolves were monsters, too. Stefan knew what the Marak would say as well as Samuel did. He smiled unpleasantly at the werewolf exposing his fangs.
"The mess has been taken care of. I called my mistress before I brought Mercy home. We don't need the werewolves to clean up after us."
Stefan was usually more polite than that, but he'd had a bad night, too. "The other vampire gave you false memories," I said, to distract the men from their antagonism. "Was that because he was a sorcerer?" Stefan tilted his head as if he were embarrassed.
"We can't do that with humans," he said, which was something I didn't want to know.
He saw my reaction and explained,
"That means we can leave those we casually feed from alive, Mercedes. Still, humans are one thing, and the vampires another. We're not supposed to be able to do it to each other. You don't have to worry, though. No vampire can remake your memory. Probably not even one who is a sorcerer."
Relief climbed through me. If I were going to pick things I didn't want a vampire to do to me, messing with my thoughts was very high on the list. I touched my neck. "That's why you wanted me with you." I sat up straighter. "You said he'd done it to another vampire. What did he make the other vampire think he'd done?" Stefan looked wary and guilty. "You knew he'd kill someone, didn't you?" I accused him. "Is that what he did to the other vampire? Make him think he'd killed someone?" The memory of the slow death I hadn't been able to prevent made me clench my fists.
"I didn't know what he would do. But yes, I believed that he had killed before, and made my friend think he had done it."
He spoke as if the words left a bitter taste in his mouth.
"But I could not act without the proof. So more died who should not have."
"You're a vampire," said Samuel. "Don't try to make us believe you care when innocents die."
Stefan met Samuel's eyes.
"I have swallowed enough death in years past that more sickens me. But believe as you wish. So many deaths threaten our secrets, werewolf. Even if I cared nothing for any human's death, I would not have wanted so many to die and endanger our secrets."
So many to die? His sureness that noise wouldn't disturb anyone in the hotel when Littleton had invited us in became suddenly clear. The thing I'd seen kill the woman would not have hesitated to kill as many people as he could. "Who else died tonight?"
"Four."
Stefan didn't look away from Samuel.
"The night clerk and three guests. Luckily, the hotel was nearly deserted."
Samuel swore. I swallowed. "So the bodies are just going to disappear?" Stefan sighed.
"We try not to have disappearances of people who will be missed. The bodies will be accounted for in such a way as to cause as little fuss as possible. An attempted robbery, a lover's quarrel that got out of hand."
I opened my mouth to say something rash, but caught myself. The rules we all had to live by weren't Stefan's fault.
"You put Mercy at risk," Samuel growled. "If he had already made another vampire kill involuntarily, he might have been able to make you kill Mercy."
"No. He couldn't have made me harm Mercy."
Stefan's voice held as much anger as Samuel's, giving a little doubt to the firmness of his answer. He must have heard it, too, because he turned his attention back to me.
I swore to you on my honor that you would take no harm from this night. I underestimated the enemy, and you suffered for it. I am forsworn.
All that is necessary for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing, I murmured. I'd had to read Edmund Burke's Reflections on the Revolution in France 3 times in college. Some of his points had seemed especially relevant to me, who had been brought up with the understanding of just how much evil there really was in the world.
What do you mean? Stefan asked.
Will my presence in that hotel room help you destroy that monster? I asked.
I hope so.
Then it was worth what little hurt I took, I said firmly. Quit beating yourself up about it.
Honor is not so easily satisfied, said Samuel, meeting Stefan's gaze.
Stefan looked like he agreed, but there was nothing more I could do for him about that. How did you know that there was something wrong with Littleton? I asked. Stefan broke off his staring contest with Samuel, dropping his eyes to Medea, who'd crawled onto his lap and crouched there, purring. If he'd been human, I'd have said he looked tired. If he dropped his eyes like that in front of a less civilized werewolf, he might have had problems. But Samuel knew that a vampire dropping his gaze was not admitting submissiveness.
I have a friend named Daniel, Stefan said after a moment. He's very young, as our kind go, and you might call him a nice boy. A month ago, when a vampire checked into a local hotel, Daniel was sent to see why he had not contacted us for the usual permissions.
Stefan shrugged.
It is something that we do a lot. It should not have been dangerous or unusual. It was an appropriate assignment for a new vampire.
Except there was a hint of disapproval in Stefan's voice that told me that he would not have sent Daniel off to confront an unknown vampire.
Somehow Daniel was sidetracked. He doesn't remember how. Something aroused his bloodlust. He never made it to the hotel. There was a small group of migrant workers who were camping in the cherry orchard, waiting to begin the harvest.
He exchanged a glance with Samuel over my head.
Like tonight, the mess wasn't pretty, but it was containable. We took their trailers and vehicles and got rid of them. The owner of the orchard just thought they'd gotten tired of waiting and moved on. Daniel was punished. Not too harshly, because he is young and the lust is so very strong. But now, of his own will, he won't eat at all. He is dying from guilt. As I told you, he is a nicer boy.
Stefan inhaled, a deep, cleansing breath. Stefan once told me that most vampires breathed because not breathing attracted human attention. I think, though, that some of them do it because their not breathing is as troubling to them as it is to the rest of us. Of course, if they're going to talk, they have to breathe a little bit anyway.
In the furor, Stefan continued, no one investigated the visiting vampire who had, after all, spent only one night in town. I didn't even think to question what had happened until I tried to help Daniel a few days ago. He talked to me about what had happened, and something just seemed wrong with his story. I know bloodlust. He could not remember why he decided to travel all the way out to Benton City, 20 miles from the hotel where he was supposed to be. Daniel is very obedient, like one of your submissive wolves. He would not have deviated from his orders without provocation. He is not able to travel as I can. He would have had to drive all the way, and driving is not something a vampire in the throes of bloodlust does well. I decided to do some investigating of the vampire he was supposed to meet. It wasn't difficult to get his name from the clerk at the hotel where he had stayed. I could find nothing on a vampire named Corey Littleton, but there was a man of that name offering his services in matters magical on the Internet.
Stefan gave the floor a slight smile.
It is forbidden us to turn anyone who is not wholly human. Mostly it wouldn't work anyway, but there are stories.
He shrugged unhappily.
I've seen enough to know that this is a good rule. When I went hunting, I expected to find a witch who'd been turned. It never occurred to me he might be a sorcerer. I haven't seen a sorcerer for centuries. Most people today don't have the belief in evil and the knowledge necessary to make a pact with a demon. So I thought Littleton was a witch, a powerful witch, though, to be able to affect the memory of a vampire, even a fledgling like Daniel.
"Why did you go after him with just Mercy?" asked Samuel. "Couldn't you have gotten another vampire to go with you?"
Daniel had been punished. The matter was deemed over.
Stefan tapped his knee, impatient with that judgment.
The mistress wanted to hear no more of it.
I had met Marsilia, the mistress of Stefan's seethe. She hadn't struck me as the type to be overly concerned about the deaths of a few humans, or even a few hundred humans.
I was considering going over her head when the vampire returned. I had no proof of my suspicions, you understand. As far as everyone else was concerned, Daniel had fallen victim to his bloodlust. So I volunteered to speak with this stranger myself. I thought I might see if he was someone who could make Daniel remember doing things he had not. I brought Mercy with me as a safety precaution. I really did not expect that he could affect me as he had Daniel.
"So you don't think Daniel killed the people he thought he did?" I asked.
"A witch who was also a vampire might be able to implant memories, but he couldn't have made Daniel kill a sorcerer."
Stefan spread his hands.
"A sorcerer could do many things. I consider myself lucky that he was so eager to make the kill himself, that he did not use the bloodlust he'd summoned in me to make me kill the maid, as I was half convinced he had. I have become arrogant over the years, Mercedes. I hadn't really believed he could do anything to me. Daniel, after all, is very new. You were supposed to be a safeguard, but I didn't expect to need you."
"Littleton was a sorcerer," I said, "and some idiot vampire chose to turn him. Who did it? Was it someone from around here? And if not, why is he here?" Stefan smiled again.
"Those are questions I shall pose to my mistress. The turning might have been a mistake. Like our fair Lily."
I'd met Lily. She'd been crazy when she'd been human, and being a vampire hadn't changed that. She was also an incredible pianist. Her maker had been so caught up by her music, he hadn't taken the time to notice anything else about her. Like the werewolves, vampires tend to rid themselves of someone who might draw unwanted attention to them. Lily's extraordinary gift had protected her, though her maker had been killed for being so careless. "How could it have been a mistake?" I asked. "I saw your reaction. You smelled the demon before we went into the hotel." He shook his head.
"Demons are hardly commonplace these days. The demon-possessed are caged quickly in mental institutions where they are subdued by drugs. Most younger vampires have never run into a sorcerer. You said yourself that you didn't know what you had scented until I told you."
"Why didn't the demon stop this sorcerer from falling victim to the vampire?" asked Samuel. "They usually protect their symbionts until they're finished with them."
"Why would it?" I said, mentally dusting off all I'd ever heard about sorcery, which wasn't much. "The demon's only desire is to create as much destruction as they can. All vampirism would do is increase Littleton's ability to create mayhem."
"Do you know something of demons, Samuel Cornick?" asked Stefan.
Samuel shook his head.
"Not enough to be of help, but I'll call my father. If he doesn't, he'll know someone who does."
"It is a vampire business."
Samuel's eyebrows shot up.
"Not if this sorcerer is leaving bloody messes behind."
"We'll see to him and to his messes."
Stefan turned to me.
"I have two more favors to ask you, though you owe me nothing more."
"What do you need?" I hoped it wasn't anything immediate. I was tired and more than ready to clean the blood off my hands, both figuratively and literally, though I was afraid the former was going to be difficult.
Would you come before my mistress and tell her what you have told me about the happenings of this night? She will not want to believe that a new-made vampire could do what he has done. No more will any of the see the welcome news of a sorcerer among us.
I had no particular desire to meet Marsilia again. He must have seen that on my face, because he continued.
He needs to be stopped, Mercy.
He took another deep breath, deeper than he needed if all he were using the air for was to talk.
I will be asked about this night in the full court. I will tell them what I have seen and heard, and they will know if what I tell them is true or false. I can tell them the events you say happened, but they cannot know they are true unless you yourself will speak for me. Without you there, they will take my memory of the maid's death as a fact, and your words to me as hearsay.
What will they do to you if they don't believe you? I asked.
I am not a new vampire, Mercedes. If they decide that I have risked our kind by killing this woman, they will destroy me, just as your pack leader would have to destroy one wolf to protect the rest.
All right, I agreed slowly.
Only if I can come with her, Samuel amended.
An escort of her choice, Stefan agreed.
Perhaps Adam Hauptmann or one of his wolves. Dr. Kornick, please don't take offense, but I don't think you should come. My mistress was taken with you last time, and self-control in such matters is not her strong suit.
Tell me when you need me, I said before Samuel could begin arguing. I'll find an escort.
Thank you, Stefan said, then hesitated. It is dangerous for you to keep reminding the Seed what you are.
Walkers are not popular among the vampires. I'd gathered that when the vampires first came to this part of the New World, the walkers here had made themselves enough of a pest that the vampires had killed most of them off. Stefan wouldn't tell me anything more detailed. Some things I'd figured out, like most vampire magic didn't work on me. But I couldn't see how I was any danger to them, unlike, say, a werewolf would be. Stefan had known what I was for years, but had kept it from his seed until I'd gone to them for help. He'd gotten into trouble for it. They already know what I am, I told him. I'll come. What's the second favor?
It's already too light out for me to travel, he said, waving a vague hand toward my window. Do you have somewhere dark I might spend the day?
The only place for Stefan to sleep was my closet. The closets in Samuel's room and the third bedroom had slatted doors that allowed too much light to go through. All of my windows had blinds, but nothing dark enough to keep a vampire safe. My bedroom took up one end of the trailer. Samuel's room was on the opposite end. I opened my door to wave Stefan inside, but Samuel came too. I sighed and didn't fuss. Samuel wouldn't leave me alone with Stefan without a fight I was too battered to enjoy. My bedroom was littered with clothing, some dirty, some clean. The clean clothes were folded in stacks I hadn't gotten around to putting in my drawers. Scattered among the clothes were books, magazines, and mail I hadn't sorted yet. If I'd known I was going to have a man in my room, I'd have cleaned it. I pulled open the closet and pulled out a couple of boxes and two pairs of shoes. That left it empty, except for the four dresses hanging on one side. It was a big closet, long enough for Stefan to lie down comfortably in. Samuel can get you a spare pillow and blanket, I said, gathering clothes as I spoke. My need to be clean had been growing since I woke up, and now it was desperate. I needed to get the smell of the woman's death off of my skin, because I couldn't get it out of my head.
Mercedes, said Stefan in a gentle tone, I don't need a blanket. I'm not going to be sleeping. I'm going to be dead.
I don't know why that was the final straw. Maybe it was the implication that I didn't understand what he was, when I just had a graphic example of what vampires could do. I'd been halfway to the bathroom, but I turned back and stared at both men. Samuel is going to get you a blanket, I told him firmly, and a pillow. You are going to sleep for the day in my closet. Dead people don't get to stay in my bedroom. I shut the bathroom door behind me and dropped the afghan I wore on the floor. I heard Samuel say,
I'll get some bedding,
before I turned on the shower to let it warm up. There's a full-length mirror on the door of my bathroom, one of those cheap ones with the imitation wood frame. When I turned to put my clothes on top of the sink where they wouldn't get wet, I got a good look at myself. At first, all I could see was the dried blood. In my hair, on my face, down my shoulder, arm, and hip, on my hands and feet. I threw up in the toilet, twice. Then I washed my hands and face and rinsed my mouth out with water. I was not unacquainted with blood. I am sometimes a coyote, after all. I've killed my share of rabbits and mice. Last winter I killed two men, werewolves. But this death was different. Evil. He hadn't killed her for food, revenge, or self-defense. He'd killed her and four other people because he liked it, and I hadn't been able to stop him. I looked back at the mirror. Bruises bloomed on my ribs and shoulder. Dark purple marks traced the path the harness had run around my chest and ribs. I must have done that while I was struggling against Stefan's hold on my leash. The bruise on the outside edge of my right shoulder was more black than purple. The left side of my face was swollen cheekbone to jaw and red with the promise of a truly spectacular bruise. I leaned forward and touched my puffy eyelid. I looked like a rape victim, except for the two dark marks on my neck. They looked sort of like a rattlesnake bite, two dark, half-formed scabs surrounded by swollen and reddened skin. I covered them with my hand and wondered how much I trusted Stefan's assessment that I would neither be turned into a vampire nor be subject to Littleton's control. I took out my hydrogen peroxide and dabbed it over the wounds, hissing at the sting. It didn't make me feel any cleaner. I took the bottle into the shower with me and poured the contents on my neck until the bottle was empty. Then I scrubbed. The blood was soon gone, though it had turned the water at my feet rusty for a few seconds. But no matter how much soap and shampoo I used, I still felt dirty. The more I scrubbed, the more frantic I felt. Littleton hadn't raped me, but he'd violated my body just the same. The thought of his mouth on me made my stomach churn again. I stood under the hot spray until the water was cold. Chapter 3. My bedroom was empty, and the door to the closet was shut when I finally emerged from the bathroom. I glanced at the clock. 15 minutes to make it to the garage if I was going to open on time. I was glad no one was there to hear me grunt and groan as I got dressed. No one alive to hear me anyway. Every muscle in my body ached, especially my right shoulder, and as soon as I bent down to pull on my socks and shoes, the battered side of my face started to throb. It would hurt me even more, though, if I lost customers because I wasn't open at my usual time. I opened the bedroom door, and Samuel looked up from where he'd been sitting on the couch. He'd been up all night, too. He ought to have gone to bed instead of waiting up to frown at me. He got up and pulled an ice pack out of the freezer.
Here, put this on your face.
It felt good, and I sagged against the doorway to enjoy the numbness it brought to my throbbing cheek.
I called Z and told him what happened, Samuel told me. You can go to bed. Z's planning on working the shop for you today. He said he could do it tomorrow, too, if you need him.
Zebold Adelbertsmeiter, known to his friends as Z, was a good mechanic, the best. He'd taught me everything I know, then sold the garage to me. He was also Fay, and the first person I'd intended to go to for information on sorcerers. Even though he sometimes filled in for me when I was sick, I hadn't even thought about calling him for help with the garage, proof that it would probably be better if I didn't try going to work today.
You're swaying, said Samuel after a moment. Go to bed. You'll feel better when you wake up.
Thank you, I mumbled before shutting myself back in my room. I flopped face down on my bed, groaned because that hurt my face again. I rolled until I was more comfortable, covered my head with my pillow, and dozed for a while. Maybe for all of half an hour. I could smell Stefan. It wasn't that he smelled bad. He just smelled like himself, sort of vampire and popcorn. But I couldn't get his statement about being dead during the day out of my head.
Ugh, there was no way I was going to be able to sleep with a dead man in my closet.
Thanks, Stefan, I told him glumly as I heaved my sore body out of bed. If I couldn't sleep, I might as well go to work. I opened the door to the living room, expecting it to be empty since Samuel had been up all night, too. Instead, he was sitting at the kitchen table drinking coffee with Adam, the local alpha werewolf who happened to live on the other side of my back fence. I hadn't heard Adam come in. Once Samuel started sharing my house, I'd become careless. I should have realized that he would come over as soon as Samuel called him, though. And of course, Samuel had to call him about the bloodbath at the hotel. Adam was the alpha, and responsible for the welfare of all the werewolves in the area. They both looked at me when I opened my door. I was tempted to turn around and go back into my bedroom with the dead man in my closet. Now, I'm not very vain. If I'd ever been, making my living covered in various grease and dirt mixtures would have cured me quickly. Still, I wasn't up to facing two sexy men when I had one eye swollen mostly shut and half of my face black and blue. Stefan, being dead, was unlikely to notice what I looked like, and I'd never dated Stefan. Not that I was dating either Adam or Samuel at the present. I hadn't dated Samuel since I was 16. I've known Samuel for as long as I can remember. I grew up in the Morox Pack in northwestern Montana, a werewolf pack being as close to what I was as my teenage mother could find. It was just chance that her great-uncle belonged to the Morox. Lucky chance, I'd come to believe. A lot of werewolves would just have killed me outright, the way a wolf will kill a coyote who invades his territory. Bran, the Morox, in addition to being the ruler of all the North American wolves, was a good man. He placed me with one of his wolves and raised me almost as if I belonged. Almost. Samuel was the Morox's son. He'd been there for me as I struggled to live in a world with no place for me. I'd been raised by the pack, but I wasn't one of them. My mother loved me, but I didn't belong in her mundane human world either. When I was 16, I'd believed I'd found my home in Samuel. Only when the Morox showed me that Samuel wanted children and not my love did I finally understand I had to make my own path in life rather than finding someone else's to join. I'd left Samuel and the pack and hadn't seen either again for more than 15 years, almost half my life. All that changed last winter. Now I had the Morox cell phone number on my speed dial, and Samuel had decided to move to the Tri-Cities. More specifically, he had decided to move in with me. I still wasn't quite sure why. Fond of it as I am, my home is a single wide trailer as old as me. Samuel, being a doctor, is used to a slightly higher standard of housing. Granted, his paperwork nightmare had taken a long time to settle. Only the month before had he at last gotten his license to practice medicine in Washington as well as Montana and Texas. He'd given up his job as a night clerk at an all-night convenience store and begun working in the emergency room at the hospital in Kennewick. Despite the increase in his income, he hadn't shown any sign of leaving. His temporary stay in my house had turned into 6 months and some change. I'd refused him at first. "Why not with Adam?" I'd asked. As alpha of the local werewolf pack, Adam was used to having short-term guests, and he had more bedrooms than I did. I didn't ask why Samuel didn't buy his own house. Samuel had already told me that he'd spent too much time alone the past few years. Werewolves don't do well on their own. They need someone, pack or family, or they begin to get odd. Werewolves who get odd tend to end up dead, and sometimes take a lot of other people down with them when they go. Samuel had raised his eyebrows and said, "Do you really want us to kill each other? Adam is the alpha, and I'm a stronger dominant than he is. Now we both live long enough to control ourselves up to a point, but if we're living together, sooner or later we'd be at each other's throat." "Adam's house is only 100 yards from mine," I told him dryly. Samuel would have been right about any other wolf, but Samuel made his own rules. If he wanted to live in peace with Adam, he could manage it.
"Please." His tone was as far from pleading as it was possible to get.
"No," I told him. There was another longer pause.
"So, how are you going to explain to your neighbors that there's a strange man sleeping on your front porch?"
He'd have done it, too. So I let him move in. I told him that the first time he flirted with me, he'd be out on his ear. I told him that I didn't love him anymore, though it might have had more effect if I had been entirely certain of that myself. It helped that I knew that he didn't love me. hadn't loved me when he tried to elope with me when I was 16 and he was who knows how old. It was not really as bad as it sounded. He grew up at a time when women married much younger than 16. It's hard on the older werewolves to adjust to modern ways of thinking. I wish I could hold it against him, though. It would help me keep in mind that he still only wanted me for what I could give him. Children who lived. Werewolves are made, not born. To become a werewolf, you need to survive an attack so vicious that you nearly die, which allows the werewolf's magic to defeat your immune system. Many, many of the werewolf's kin who try to become werewolves themselves die in the attempt. Samuel had outlived all of his wives and children. Those children of his who had attempted to become werewolf had all died. Female werewolves can't have children. Their pregnancy spontaneously abort during the moon's change. Human women can have children with werewolves, but they can only carry to term the babies who have only human DNA. But I was neither human nor werewolf. Samuel was convinced I'd be different. Not being moon-called, my changes aren't violent or even really necessary. I once went 3 years without shifting to my coyote self. Wolves and coyotes could interbreed in the wild. Why not werewolves and walkers? I don't know what the biological answer to that is, but my answer is that I didn't care to be a broodmare, thank you very much. So, no Samuel for me. My feelings for Samuel should have been neat and tidily put in the past, except that I hadn't entirely been able to convince myself that all I felt for him was the lingering warmth anyone would feel for an old friend. Maybe I'd have come to some conclusion about Samuel, who had, after all, been living in my home for better than half a year, if it hadn't been for Adam. Adam had been the bane of my existence for most of the time I'd lived in the Tri-Cities, where he ruled with an iron hand. Like the Maroc, he had a marked tendency to treat me like one of his minions when it suited him, and like a human stray when it didn't. He was high-handed, to say the least. He'd declared me his mate before the pack, and then had the gall to tell me it was for my own protection so his wolves wouldn't bother me, a coyote, living in their territory. Once he said it, it was so, and nothing I could say would change it in the eyes of his pack. Last winter, though, he had needed me, and it changed things between us. We went on 3 dates. During the first one, I had a broken arm, and he'd been very careful. On the second, he and his teenage daughter Jessie took me to the Richland Light Opera Company's presentation of The Pirates of Penzance. I'd had a great time. On the third date, my arm had been almost healed, and there had been no Jessie, no middle school auditorium to cool any passionate impulses we might have had. We went dancing, and only his daughter waiting for him at his home, and Samuel waiting for me at mine, had kept our clothes on. After he'd taken me home, I recovered enough to be scared. Falling in love with a werewolf is not a safe thing to do, but falling in love with an alpha is worse, especially for someone like me. I had fought too long to belong to myself, to allow myself to fall into line with the rest of his pack. So the next time he called to take me out, I was unexpectedly busy. Avoiding someone who lives next door requires a lot of effort, but I managed. It helped that when the werewolves became public, Adam's time was suddenly taken up with trips back and forth between Washington, D.C. and the Tri-Cities. Though he was one of the 100 or so werewolves who'd revealed themselves to the public, Adam wasn't one of Brand's frontmen. He didn't have the temperament for being a celebrity. But after working with the government for 40-odd years, first in the military and later as a security consultant, he developed a network of contacts as well as an understanding of politics that made him invaluable to the Maroc and to the government as they tried to decide how to deal with yet another group of preternatural creatures. Between his schedule and my clever avoidance tactics, I hadn't seen him for almost 2 months. Even to my monocular gaze, he was beautiful. More beautiful than I remembered him being. I wanted to linger on his Slavic cheekbones and his sensuous mouth, damn it. I jerked my gaze to Samuel, which was hardly safer. He wasn't as pretty, but that didn't matter to my stupid hormones. Samuel broke the silence first.
"Why aren't you in bed, Mercy?" he drawled. "You look worse than the accident victim I had die on the table last week."
Adam came to his feet and crossed the living room in 4 long strides, while I waited like a rabbit in a snare, knowing I should run but unable to move. He stopped in front of me, whistling softly between his teeth as he examined the damage. When he leaned closer and touched my neck, I heard a noise from the kitchen. Samuel had broken his coffee cup. He didn't look up at me as he set about cleaning the mess.
"Nasty," Adam said, drawing my attention back to him. "Can you see out of that eye?"
"Not as well as I see out of the other," I told him. "But I see well enough to tell that you aren't on your way to D.C. like you were supposed to be." He'd had to come back for Moon's night, but I knew that he'd flown in yesterday afternoon and had been scheduled to fly out an hour ago. The corner of his mouth kicked up, and I could have bitten off my tongue when I realized I'd just let him know that I was keeping track of his movements.
"My schedule changed. I was supposed to fly out to Los Angeles a few hours ago. D.C. was last week and next week."
"So why are you still here?" The amusement left his face, and his eyes narrowed as he said curtly,
"My ex-wife decided she is in love again. She and her new boyfriend headed off to Italy for an indefinite period. When I called, Jesse had already been alone for 3 days."
Jesse was his 15-year-old daughter, who had been living with her mother in Eugene for the summer.
"I bought her a plane ticket, and she should be here in a couple of hours. I told Bran I'm off duty. He'll have to shuffle politicians on his own for a while."
"Poor Jesse," I said. Jesse was one of the reasons I'd always respected Adam, even when he frustrated me the most. He'd never let anything, not business, not the pack, come before his daughter.
"So, I'll be around for a while."
It wasn't the words. It was the way he looked at me when he said them that forced me back a step. I hate it when that happens. I decided to change the subject. "Good. Daryl's a great guy, but he's pretty hard on Warren when you aren't around." Daryl was Adam's second, and Warren his third. In most packs, the two ranks were so close that there was always some tension between the wolves who held them, especially without the alpha around. Warren's sexual preferences made the tension even worse. Being different among humans is hard. Being different among wolves is usually deadly. There aren't very many homosexual werewolves who survive for long. Warren was tough, self-reliant, and Adam's best friend. The combination was enough to keep him alive, but not always comfortable, in the pack.
"I know," Adam said. "It would help if Daryl weren't so cute," Samuel said casually as he crossed the living room to stand beside Adam.
Technically, he should have stood behind him, since Adam was the alpha and Samuel was a lone wolf outside the pack hierarchy. But Samuel wasn't just any lone wolf. He was the Morok's son, and more dominant even than Adam if he'd wanted to push matters. "I dare you to say that to Daryl," I challenged.
"Don't."
Adam smiled, but his voice was serious. Though he spoke to Samuel, he'd never looked away from me. To me, he said,
"Samuel says you're going to need an escort to the Vampire Seed sometime in the near future. Call me, and I'll find someone to go with you."
"Thank you. I will." He touched my sore cheek with a light finger.
"I'd do it myself, but I don't think it would be wise."
I agreed with him wholeheartedly. A werewolf escort would serve both as a bodyguard and a statement that I wasn't without friends. The Alpha's escort would turn it into a power play between him and the vampire's leaders, with Stefan caught in the middle. "I know," I said. "Thank you." I couldn't stay in that room with both men one more minute. Even a human woman could have drowned in the testosterone in the air, it was so strong. If I didn't leave, they were going to start fighting. I hadn't missed the way Samuel's eyes had whitened when Adam touched my cheek. Then there was the need I had to bury my nose in Adam's neck and inhale the exotic scent of his skin. I looked away from him and found myself gazing into Samuel's white eyes. He was so close to turning that the distinctive black ring around the outside of his pupils was clearly visible. It should have scared me. Samuel's nostrils flared. I smelled it, too. Arousal. "I've got to go," I said, properly panicked. I gave them a hasty wave as I scuttled out of the house, hastily pulling the door shut behind me. The relief of having a door between me and both men was intense. I was breathing hard, as if I'd run a race, adrenaline pushing the pain of the sorcerer's attack away. I took a deep breath of the morning air, trying to clear my lungs of werewolf before heading out to my car. I opened the rabbit's door, and the sudden smell of blood made me step abruptly back. The car had been parked where I always left it. I'd forgotten that Stefan must have used it to bring me back home. There were stains on both front seat covers. Both of us must have been pretty bloody. But the most impressive thing was the fist-shaped dent on my dash just above the radio. Stefan had been upset. I pulled into my garage and parked at the far end of the lot next to Z's old truck. Never trust a mechanic who drives new cars. They're either charging too much money for their work, or they can't keep an old car running. Maybe both. VWs are good cars. They used to be cheap good cars, now they're expensive good cars. But every make has a few lemons. VW had the Thing, which at least looked cool, the Fox, and the Rabbit. I figured in another couple of years my Rabbit would be the only one still running in the greater Tri-Cities. I let the Rabbit idle for a moment and debated going in. I'd stopped at the nearest auto parts store and picked up seat covers to replace the ones I'd had to throw away. Judging from the sick looks I'd gotten from the clerk, my battered face wasn't going to be drumming up business for me anytime soon. But there were four cars parked in the lot, which meant we were busy. If I stayed in the garage, no one would see my face. I got out of the car slowly. The dry heat of late morning wrapped around me, and I closed my eyes for a moment to enjoy it.
"Good morning, Mercedes," said a sweet old voice. "Beautiful day."
I opened my eyes and smiled. "Yes, Mrs. Hannah, it is." The Tri-Cities, unlike Portland and Seattle, doesn't have much of a permanent homeless population. Our temperatures get up well over 100 in the summers and below zero in the winters, so most of our homeless people are only traveling through. Mrs. Hannah looked homeless, with her battered shopping cart full of plastic bags of cans and other useful items. But someone once told me she lived in the small trailer in the park by the river and had taught piano lessons until her arthritis made it impossible. After that, she walked the streets of downtown Kennewick, collecting aluminum cans and selling pictures she colored out of coloring books so she could buy food for her cats. Her white-gray hair was braided and tucked under the battered old baseball cap that kept the sun out of her face. She wore a woolen A-line skirt with bobby socks and tennis shoes, a size too large. Her T-shirt celebrated some long-past Spokane lilac festival, and its lavender color was an interesting contrast to the black and red plaid flannel shirt that hung loosely over her shoulders. Age had bent her over until she was barely as tall as the cart she pushed. Her tanned, big-knuckled hands sported chipped red nail polish that matched her lipstick. She smelled of roses and her cats. She frowned at me and squinted.
"Boys don't want girls who have more muscles than they do, Mercedes. Boys like girls who can dance and play piano. Mr. Hannah, God rest his soul, used to tell me that I floated over a dance floor."
This was an old argument. She'd grown up in a time when the only proper place for a woman was next to her man. "It wasn't the karate this time," I told her, touching my face lightly.
"Put some frozen peas on that, dear," she said. "That'll keep the swelling down."
"Thank you," I said. She nodded her head briskly and set off down the road, her cart squeaking. It was too hot for flannel and wool, but then it had been a cool spring evening when she died a few months ago. Most ghosts fade after a while, so probably in a few months we wouldn't be able to converse anymore. I don't know why she came by to talk to me. Maybe she was still worried about my unmarried state. I was still smiling when I walked into the office. Gabriel, my part-time tool rustler receptionist, was working full-time in the summer. He looked up when I walked in and took a startled double take. "Karate," I lied, inspired by Mrs. Hannah's assumption, and saw him relax. He was a good kid, and as human as it got. He knew that Z was Fae, of course, because Z had been forced to come out a few years ago by the Grey Lords who rule the Fae. Like the werewolves, the Fae had come out a little at a time to avoid alarming the public. Gabriel knew about Adam because that was also a matter of public record. I had no intention of opening his eyes further, though. It was too dangerous. So no stories of vampires or sorcerers for him if I could manage it, especially since there were a few customers around.
"Geez," he said, "I hope the other guy looks worse."
I shook my head. "Stupid white belt." There were a couple of men sitting on the battered but comfortable chairs in the corner of the office. At my words, one of them leaned forward and said,
I'd rather fight a dozen black belts at the same time than one white belt.
He was so well-groomed that he was handsome, despite a nose that was a little too broad and deep-set eyes. I brightened my smile like any good businesswoman and said, Me too, with feeling.
I'm guessing you'd be Mercedes Thompson, he asked,
coming to his feet and walking up to the counter with his hand outstretched.
That's right.
I took his hand, and he shook mine with a firm grip that would have done credit to a politician.
Tom Black,
he smiled, showing pearly white teeth.
I've heard a lot about you. Mercedes the Volkswagen mechanic.
Like I hadn't heard that one before. Still, he didn't sound obnoxious, just mildly flirtatious.
Nice to meet you.
I wasn't interested in flirtation, so I turned my attention back to Gabriel. Any problems this morning? He smiled.
With Z here? Listen, Mercy, my mother asked me to ask if you want the girls here this weekend to clean again.
Gabriel had a generous handful of siblings, all girls, the youngest in preschool and the oldest just entering high school, and all supported by their widowed mother, who worked as a dispatcher for the Kennewick Police Department, not a high-paying career. The two oldest girls had been coming in on a semi-regular basis and cleaning the office. They did a good job, too. I hadn't realized that the film on my front window had been grease. I thought Z had had some sort of treatment done to it to block out the sun.
Sounds fine to me, I told him. If I'm not here, they can use your key.
I'll tell her.
Good. I'm going to head into the garage and stay out of sight today. Don't want to scare away customers.
I gave Tom Black a brisk nod that was friendly but aloof. Then stopped to say a few words to the other man who was waiting. He was an old customer who liked to chat. Then I slipped into the garage before someone new could come in. I found Z lying on his back under a car, so all I could see of him was from the belly down. Siebold Adalbertsmeiter, my former boss, is an old fey, a metal worker, which is unusual for the fey who mostly can't handle cold iron. He calls himself a gremlin, though he is a lot older than the name coined by flyboys in World War I. I have a degree in history, so I know useless things like that. He looked like a 50-ish, thinnish, with a little pot belly, grumpy man. Only the grumpy part was true. Thanks to glamour, a fae can look like anyone they want to. Glamour is the thing that makes something a fae, as opposed to, say, a witch or a werewolf. Hey, Z, I said when he showed no sign of noticing my presence. Thanks for coming out this morning. He rolled himself out from under the car and frowned deeply at me.
You need to stay away from the vampires, Mercedes Athena Thompson.
Like my mother, he only used my full name when he was angry with me. I'd never tell him, but I've always kind of liked the way it sounds when pronounced with a German accent. He took in my face in a single glance and continued,
You should be home sleeping. What is the use of having a man in the house if he cannot take care of you for a while?
I said. I give up. What's the use of having a man in the house? He didn't smile, but I was used to that. Anyway, I continued briskly, though I kept my voice down so the people in the office couldn't hear anything. There are two werewolves and a dead vampire in my house, and I thought it was full enough to do without me for a while.
You killed a vampire?
He gave me a look of respect, which was pretty impressive since he was still lying on his back on the creeper. Nope. The sun did, but Stefan should recover in time to face Marsilia tonight. At least, I was assuming it would be tonight. I didn't know much about the vampires, but the werewolves trials tend to convene on the spot rather than 6 months after a crime. They are also over in a matter of hours, sometimes minutes, rather than months. Can't convince your Pack Alpha you are less trouble to him alive than dead? Too bad. Pack Law, necessarily brutal, was one of those nasty things that Bran was keeping under wraps for a while.
Samuel told me you are going to be at a trial for the vampire.
He called you? I said, outraged. What did he do, ask you to call him when I got here safely?
Z smiled at me for the first time and got out his cell phone. With oil-stained fingers, he punched in my number.
She's here, he said. Made it fine.
He hung up without waiting for a reply and widened his smile further as he dialed another number. I knew that one, too, but in case I'd missed it, he used names.
Hello, Adam, he said. She's here.
He listened for a moment. I did, too, but he must have had the volume turned down low because all I could hear was the rumble of a male voice. Z's smile turned into a malevolent grin. He looked at me and said,
Adam wants to know what took you so long.
I started to roll my eyes, but it made the sore half of my face hurt worse, so I stopped. Tell him I had wild, passionate sex with a complete stranger. I didn't stick around to hear if Z passed my message on or not. I snatched my coveralls off their hook and stalked into the bathroom. Werewolves are control freaks, I reminded myself as I dressed for work. Being control freaks keeps them in charge of their wolf, which is a good thing. If I didn't like the side effects, I shouldn't hang out with werewolves, which I wouldn't be doing if I didn't have one living with me and another living on the other side of my back fence. Alone in the bathroom, though, I could admit to myself that even though I was really, really angry, I'd have been disappointed if they hadn't checked up on me. How's that for illogical? When I came out, Z gave me the next repair job. I may have bought the business from him, but when we worked together, he still gave the orders. Part of it was habit, I suppose, but a larger part of it was that, though I am a good mechanic, Z is magic, literally and figuratively. If it weren't for his tendency to get bored with easy stuff, he'd never have hired me. Then I'd have had to take my liberal arts degree and gotten a job at McDonald's or Burger King like all the rest of the history majors. We worked companionably in silence for a while, until I ran into a job that required four hands rather than two. While I turned the ratchet, Z, who was holding a part in place for me, said,
I took a peek under that cover.
He nodded toward the corner of the shop where my latest restoration project lay in wait. Pretty, isn't she? I said. Or at least she will be when I get her fixed up. She was a 1968 Carmen Ghia in almost pristine condition.
Are you going to restore it or make a street rod?
I don't know, I said. Her paint is still the original, and there's only a little cracking on the hood. I hate to mess with it unless I have to. If I can get her running well with original parts and Kim can stitch up the seats, I'll leave it at that. There are three groups of old car enthusiasts. People who think a car should be left as much original as possible. The ones who restore it better than factory, and the people who gut them and replace the brakes, engine, and suspension with more modern equipment. Z is firmly in the latter group. He is not sentimental. If something works better, that's what you should use. I suppose 40 or 50 years doesn't mean the same thing to him as it does to the rest of us. One person's antique is another's rusting hulk. Since a good part of my income comes from restoring rusting hulks, I'm not picky. I have a partnership with an upholstery genius, Kim, and a painter who also likes to drive around and show the cars so we can sell them. After deducting the actual material cost of the restore and the shows, we split the profits according to hours spent on the project.
Air-cooled takes a lot of upkeep, Z said.
Someone who wants an original condition Ghia won't care about that, I told him. He grunted, unconvinced, and went back to his job. Gabriel took my rabbit out to get sandwiches, then sat in the garage to eat with us. I uncovered the Ghia, and the three of us ate and debated the best thing to do with the car until it was time to go back to work. Z, I asked as he raised a facade in the air to take a look at the exhaust. He grunted as he tapped with his index finger the exhaust pipe where it was badly dented, just in front of the first muffler. What do you know about sorcerers? He stopped his tapping and sighed.
Old gremlins go out of their way to stay away from demon hosts, and it's been a while since humans believed enough in the devil to sell their souls to him.
I got a little light-headed. It wasn't that I didn't believe in evil. Quite the opposite. I've had ample proof of God, so I accepted that his opponent exists too. I just didn't particularly want to know that someone who made a deal with Satan was lurking 10 miles from my home killing hotel maids. I thought it was just a demon, I said faintly.
Yeah,
he said. Then he turned and saw my face.
Devil, demon, English is an imprecise language in these things. There are things that serve the great beast of Christian scripture. Greater and lesser spirits, demons or devils, and they all serve evil. The greater servants are bound away from our world, but can be invited in, just as vampires cannot enter a home without an invitation.
All right. I took a deep breath. What else do you know? Z reached up and put his hand on the pipe.
Not much, Liebchen. The few men I've encountered who claim to be sorcerers were nothing but demon bait when I met them.
What's the difference?
The difference is who's holding the reins.
The exhaust pipe began glowing a bright cherry red under Z's hand.
Demons serve only one master well, and those who forget it tend to become enslaved rather quickly. Those who remember might stay in control a while longer.
I frowned at him. So all the demon-possessed start out as sorcerers? Z shook his head.
There are many kinds of invitations, intentional and not. Sorcerer, demon-possessed, it doesn't matter. Eventually, the demon is in control.
The exhaust pipe made a loud noise and popped back out to its proper shape. Z met my gaze.
This creature is playing with the vampire's mercy. Stay out of its business. The seed is better equipped to deal with such than you are.
By 5:30, I was elbow deep in a Vanagon tune-up, so I had Gabriel close up the office and tried to send both him and Z off. My battered face made them more reluctant than usual to leave me working alone, but I persuaded them to go at last. While Z had been there, I'd kept the big air conditioner running and the garage door shut. But, unlike the werewolves, I enjoy the summer heat. So once I was alone, I turned off the cool air and opened up the bay doors.
Does that help?
I looked up and saw that the customer from earlier in the day was standing in the open bay door.
Tom Black, he reminded me.
Does what help? I asked, wiping off my hands and taking a sip of water from the bottle balanced precariously on the car's bumper.
Humming, he said. I was wondering if it helped.
There was something about the way he said it that bothered me, as if he was a good friend of mine instead of someone I'd exchanged a few words with. His earlier remark about white belts didn't make him a martial artist, but his body movement as he walked into my garage did. I kept my expression polite, though the coyote in me wanted to lift my lip. He was invading my territory. I hadn't realized I was humming, I told him. This is the last car I'm working on today. I knew it wasn't his car, because it was one I worked on regularly. If Gabriel didn't call you, then we probably won't get to your car until tomorrow.
How did a pretty woman like you get to be a mechanic? He asked.
I tilted my head so I could see him better out of my good eye. Gabriel had told me that if I had kept an ice pack on it longer, it wouldn't have swollen up so badly. On good days, my looks were passable. Today, hideous and awful were more apt. If we had been on neutral territory, I'd probably have said something like, "Gee, I don't know, how'd a handsome man like you get to be such a pushy bastard?" But this was my place of work, and he was a customer. "Same as all the other pretty mechanics, I expect," I said. "Listen, I have to get this finished up. Why don't you call tomorrow morning, and Gabriel will have an estimate for when you can expect your car to be done." I walked forward as I said it. The motion should have pushed him back. But he held still, so I had to stop or get too close to him. He smelled of coconut sunscreen and cigarette smoke.
"Actually, I picked my car up earlier," he said. "I came by tonight to talk to you."
He was human, but I saw the same predatory look in his eyes that the wolves had when they were off on a hunt. Being in my own garage had made me feel too safe, and I'd let myself get too close to him. I had weapons aplenty in the form of wrenches and crowbars, but they were all out of reach. "Did you?" I said. "Why?"
"I wanted to ask you how you liked dating a werewolf. Did you know he was a werewolf when you started dating him? Did you have sex with him?"
His voice acquired a sudden razor edge. It was such a shift in topic that I blinked stupidly at him for a moment. This man didn't smell like a fanatic. Hatred has its own scent. When Z first came out, there was a group of people who'd marched around the shop with placards. Some of them came out one night and spray-painted Fairyland in angry red letters across my garage doors. Tom Black smelled intense, as if the answers to his questions really mattered to him. Outside, a small-block Chevy 350 pulled into my lot, and I recognized its purr. With the last of my trepidation gone, I realized there was only one reason for the questions he'd asked. I narrowed my eyes at him. "Hell," I said in disgust, "you're a reporter." Some of the werewolves coming out deliberately attracted attention on the Maroc's orders.
heroes from the military or police and fire departments, and a couple of movie stars. Adam was not one of them. I could see why someone would send a reporter out sniffing around him, though. Not only was he an alpha, but he was a pretty alpha. I couldn't wait to hear